Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. What makes another human being fascinating? Is it their intelligence, their drive, their passion for a cause, a business, a career? Is it something quirkier, more artistic, enigmatic? We here at All Sides wanted to find out, so we set out on a mission to find fascinating Ohioans and bring their stories to you. We begin today with the owners of Bumble's Backyard, a new bar and coffee shop with a twist, a dog park for your furry friends, complete with bark tenders. Joining me now are Bumble Backyard's co-founders and owners, Lauren Betterton and her husband, Evan. Lauren, Evan, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much for having us.
So Bumble's Backyard is a dog park, a bar, and a coffee shop. How did you come up with this mashup?
Yeah, so this was really something that came to us in 2020. We are dog parents, first and foremost. So Bumble is a real dog. He's our dog. And during the pandemic, it was really hard for us to find ways for him to play with his friends. And we were really focused on how do we get some playtime for Bumble, but also we were missing hanging out with our friends too. And so we would have people over on Wednesday nights. We would order pizza, get some beers, and we would have basically a picnic in our backyard. So Bumble could play with his friends and we could catch up with ours too. And this piece of community was just so important for us in that time and really sparked something in us of, you know, people have such a value of their relationships with their dogs, and that is really a gateway to better relationships with other people as well. And that was 4.5 years ago almost since we started that tradition of backyard hangs, as we called it. And we really started thinking about, you know, typically this community kind of gathers at the dog park, and there are a lot of challenges at the dog park. If you have a dog, you probably know that it's usually pretty muddy. You don't know what you're going to get when you're there. Just a lot of variables. And if you also are like us and want to take your dog everywhere, there are some limitations to that too, and not always really fun for the dog. So we really wanted to create a space where it was fun for dogs, fun for humans, and really focused on building community.
So it's literally Bumble's Backyard. Like
Bumble's Backyard. Yes.
I love that. How did you come up? How did you decide on the location?
We initially knew that we wanted to be inside the city of Columbus. When we're thinking about this kind of community space, we wanted this to be something that could be part of someone's everyday routine. So they start their morning with a coffee. They work from Bumble's Backyard. They have a happy hour there. They go on a date there. It's, you know, where they watch the Ohio State football game on the weekends. And we knew we wanted to be really accessible for folks who live in the city, like Evan and me. And whenever we really started looking for land in earnest about 2 years ago, we were looking at neighborhoods that also had enough space available because we knew we needed at least a half acre in order for this to be comfortable for the dogs too, because first and foremost, we needed plenty of space for them to have the zoomies.
Yeah, you guys funded this business by yourself. How did you manage that?
We counted a lot of pennies.
A lot of careful planning, a lot of spreadsheets. I feel like we just lived in spreadsheets for the last 4 years, but
yeah.
Yeah. And that was something that, again, was really important to us. And we have just been really grateful that we've been able to self-fund this. And that came in part from in the spring, we did a crowdfunding campaign through Indiegogo, where we raised $20,000 of support from, you know, the Columbus community and beyond. And that was something that, again, we were really proud of, that the folks in Columbus, again, and beyond, saw the need in our community for this and wanted to chip in to make sure that it could come to pass.
This is also probably a great time to shout out all of our friends and family who have put in sweat equity and came out and helped us build furniture and paint and all of the things in the middle.
Yeah. I love that it was a community effort. I want to talk a little bit about the community at Bumble's Backyard, because you can't just show up with your dog. You've got to get a doggy pass. So what is involved in that, and why is that important?
Yeah, well, to go back to what I was saying before about the dog park, is kind of like the Wild West. You never know what you're going to get. We really wanted to make sure that Bumble's Backyard was the opposite experience. And we think that people are going to have the most fun and dogs are going to have the most fun if we consider safety the number one priority. And we do. So in order for your dog to get a membership or a day pass or, you know, whatever it is that that you want to get for them, they have to meet three different criteria. So they have to be up to date with their Bordetella, rabies, and distemper vaccines. And that is something that our community has been hugely complimentary of, just know that like all the dogs there have the vaccines that are really necessary to create a safe environment. They have to be spayed or neutered if they're over a year old. And then lastly, we do a temperament test during your dog's first visit. And that is usually with Bumble himself. So we give a few minutes to let the dog run around, play with Bumble. And that also lets us have a chance to talk with the humans who are bringing their dog to say, you know, here's how Bumble's backyard is different. Here's what we're thinking about. Here are all the safety precautions we have in place. And that just helps us all have a really good time.
So what is a bark tender? Is it somebody going around with pup cups? Like, I don't know what to picture here.
Yes. So we really try to not take ourselves too seriously, and bartenders are really the embodiment of that. So all of our staff are bartenders, whether they are outside in the yard or inside creating drinks for everyone. But again, to go back to that, how are we different from a public dog park? For the folks who are outside bartenders, we really think of them as creating a community space and again making sure that everyone is just having the very best possible time. So a bartender is trained in animal behavior. They're looking to make sure that all the dogs are having a good time. They're looking for signs of agitation among dogs so they can, you know, intervene before anything happens. If, you know, you're in the middle of a really great book and your dog does some business and you miss it, we're there to help clean up, make sure everything stays clean. But we want those bartenders to be the friendly face that you recognize the second you walk in the park. They know your dog's name. Maybe they know your name, or maybe they know you as Bumble's mom, which I'm guilty of all the time. But we really want those folks to be the face of Bumble's Backyard.
And I want to be clear, this is not a doggy daycare. You can't drop your dog off and go do errands, correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, we are really in the relationship with your dog business. So we want you to come. We want you to enjoy time with your dog, enjoy time with your friends and your friends' dogs, and all get to spend time together.
Evan, if I don't have a dog, which I don't, am I still allowed to go?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to have you without a dog. And honestly, if you don't have a dog or for whatever reason, it's a great place to come and pet other people's dogs. Stay as long as you want, and you gotta get that, little serotonin hit, and then you get to leave without a dog and without worrying about it. But yeah, it's awesome. So we've had a lot of people come in that boat, or a lot of friends that have dogs that come bring their friends. They're like, this is great. I don't have a dog, but I get to get my dog fix in for the day. So yes, please come hang out with us. And we make the dogs pay a cover, but humans get in for free. So
And so it's cheaper for me to go.
exactly.
Yeah, no, I got a little one with allergies, so it's complicated. But I imagine there might be some risk having food on the menu at a dog park, but how do you balance that? Like, are there rules for where you can and can't take stuff?
Yeah, so we don't allow any food in the park. And we'll start with the personal anecdote of Bumble is the hungriest dog in the world. And so if there is food, he is going to snatch it. And so we just assume that all dogs are that way. So we don't allow any food in the park. We have the most amazing Mexican restaurant and pizza spot right across the street. So we always encourage people, you know, swing by on your way out, get something to take home. But to kind of circle back on that, we also don't allow any toys in the park. So again, toys and treats are two of the things that dogs get really possessive over. And so again, safety being a number one priority, we don't allow any toys or any treats in the park just to make sure the dogs are able to behave themselves.
And just from a dog behavioral standpoint, we have found that that creates these incredibly like confident and fun-loving dogs that will go out and explore and meet new people and meet new dogs in a way that we have no other space in the entire city to do. The number of people, I mean, in the 2 weeks we have been open, that have come up to me and said, like, this is the first time my dog has played with another dog in years.
Oh, that's
I mean,
great.
it's double digits, and we've been open 2 weeks, so that's been awesome.
Yeah, can you tell us what is on your menu?
Yes, so we are really, I consider our menu to be a love letter to the city of Columbus. So we have a full espresso bar with coffee from One Line Coffee. So they're our coffee partner. So we can make any of your favorite espresso drinks that you would find anywhere else in the city. We also use milk from Indian Creek Creamery, which is also a Columbus area dairy farm. One of my favorite facts about this business is that I have a milkman who brings milk to our business. And then we also have a really great beer selection, again, with breweries who are local to Columbus. This is something that is really an ethos for us. So we say it's by Columbus for Columbus. So any chat time we have a chance to bring in a Columbus partner, we do that because Columbus has some of the best craft beverage folks, I don't know, in the country, maybe. I don't want to be too bold, but I'll also
It's
happy to be
okay to
too
be
bold.
biased.
Yes, I'm very biased. And then seasonally, we also have soft serve ice cream. We just closed the machine down for the winter, but we'll be back open in April. The backstory there, I never intended to be an ice cream stress. But whenever we purchased our property back in May of last year, it was also the home of an operating soft serve ice cream shop. And so we said, well, add it to
Why
the list. Exactly. And so with that delicious Indian Creek Creamery milk, we make all of our ice cream by hand, fresh,
Oh.
all the time. So again, I've become quite the whiz at making ice cream, but it is the best soft serve. It's delicious. So in the spring and summer, we have a really great milkshake menu as well.
I understand you guys also have Wi-Fi, so if someone wanted to come for like an hour or two, have a coffee, get some work done, let their dog run, that's totally cool.
Absolutely. And like Evan said, this will be our third weekend of operation. So I feel like we've learned a lot in this time. But last week we had our first Zoom meeting at Bumble's backyard. I fangirled a little bit that someone was actually working from Bumble's backyard. But yes, we would be more than happy to be your work from home spot.
So then, obviously, I want to know, how do we find you? If someone's like, oh my gosh, I need to go here, where do we find you online? Where are you located? What are the hours?
Yes, so we are physically located in South Franklinton. So our address is 1280 Brown Road. Super easy to get to, really convenient right off the interstate. And online, you can find us on Instagram at Bumble's Backyard. So Bumble S Backyard. And then you can also visit our website, www.bumblesbackyard.com. And we keep both of those really up to date. So if you have questions or need clarification, looking for membership pricing, all of that's available on our website and on our Instagram as well. And when you're ready to come out and visit us, which we hope you will very soon, we are open Wednesday to Friday from 2 to 8 p.m., Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Great. Most important question for last. What kind of dog is Bumble?
Bumble is a very precious 7.5-year-old golden doodle. And Evan will not be surprised when I say he is also the love of my life. And he's a real sweetheart. And whenever we look around at Bumble's backyard and it's full of dogs and there is Bumble playing with them, it makes me so happy that we're able to give him a place where he can still have fun with his friends too.
That was Bumble's backyard owner, Lauren Betterton, and her husband, Evan Betterton. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us. We're huge fans of the show. It's an honor to be
Yeah, I
here.
really appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Coming up, we're talking with a hometown star who's coming back to make a difference. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Stever. What does it take to make a human being fascinating? Their intelligence, their drive, their passion? For J.C. Sheldon, her passion is basketball. And for anyone who's watched her play, it's her grit and determination that stand out. In high school, she played at Dublin Kaufman. She suited up for the Buckeyes and capped an impressive collegiate career by being taken fifth overall in the WNBA draft. JC just finished her rookie season with the Dallas Wings, and this week came news that she's going to be back in Columbus as Ohio's State Director of Player Development. JC joins us now. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm getting all the cool mom points this morning. My daughter loves basketball, and she loves you, so she's very excited.
I'm excited as well.
So you're starting your second year with the Dallas Wings. How does this new job with OSU fit in?
Yes, it actually was a bit unexpected. I was planning on going to Townsville, Australia to play overseas in the off season, but unfortunately dealing with the injury. So this opportunity came about, and obviously being from Ohio and playing at Ohio State, it's an opportunity I couldn't pass up. So super excited to be here now.
Yeah, so it sounds like just being closer to home right now, is that pretty much part of the reason why you wanted to take this job?
Yeah, honestly, to rehab and recover for next season was the main part. Getting my body healthy again for the WNBA season come April. And the timing worked out perfect. We were done in about March for Ohio State, and then April I'll head to Dallas right when we're done here. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah. You'll be reunited with former players like Cody McCann. What has been their reaction to you coming back?
Yeah, I hope they're excited. I definitely am, being obviously in a different position with them now. But having played with them, it gives me a definitely an advantage just knowing them as players, as people, and how to help them grow. So so excited to continue to, you know, see them grow and get better throughout the season.
Another former Ohio State star, Katie Smith, has also been hired as an assistant coach. She won two NBA championships as a player. And what's it going to be like? You get to go work with her, too.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, she's someone I met a couple of months back and started to form a relationship with. Obviously a legend at Ohio State. And honestly, with all the greats, she's one of the greatest ever to do it. So these girls don't even know how lucky they are to have her. And we're super excited to have her a part of the staff, too.
So can you tell us a little bit about what your role will be? What does a director of player development do?
Yeah, I think it's just as much on the court as it is off the court, to be honest. I think just helping them develop as players, obviously, in any part of the game that they need it in, and then as, most importantly, people. And it's hard being a college athlete, I know. I've done it for 5 years, and how to balance everything and how to, you know, balance playing and balance schoolwork and whatnot. But I think just being there for them, whether, like I said, whether it's on the court advice, off the court advice, and just making sure everyone's locked in every game, every practice. So I'm excited. I'm excited to continue to build these relationships with these girls.
Yeah, you graduated from Ohio State with a bachelor's and a master's?
Yes,
all while playing Division I basketball. That's impressive.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and I was able to, you know, excel in school too, which is most important. And Ohio State's a great, great university all around. So super happy to have gone here.
How is playing in the WNBA different from collegiate play? Like, how are you adjusting?
Yeah, it's a lot different. Obviously, college basketball is super competitive and obviously fun to watch, but you're playing against the best women in the world in the WNBA, and it's an adjustment for sure. But being a competitor, it's something you look forward to, and you look forward to those matchups against the greats. And I was fortunate enough to get a lot of experience my rookie year, which was really helpful and will definitely help me going into next season too.
Yeah, women's basketball and women's sports overall are really growing in popularity with breakout stars, more cities adding franchises like the Golden State in Oakland in 2025, Toronto and Portland in 2026. From where you're sitting, is your reaction somewhat of, well, it's about time?
You know, it's amazing for us to see because, I mean, the women who have been playing in the league have deserved this for so long. So we're grateful for it and going to continue to, you know, just push how entertaining women's basketball is. And I think people are finally starting to tune in, and hopefully we can sustain that population and that excitement around our game. But for us, we just love to play. So it's exciting to see people tuning in for sure.
Yeah. Do you foresee Ohio, Columbus, maybe getting a professional women's basketball team at some point in the future?
I would like to think yes. I don't know. That's not my area of expertise.
A little wishful thinking.
Right. It would awesome. It would definitely be awesome. I mean, Ohio has a great fan base, obviously with Ohio State football and the Blue Jackets down here. But I think it'd be a great addition to Columbus for sure.
One of the things in preparing, so I did a little, you know, reading into your background, and it's you really come from a sports family. Your younger brother, AJ, plays basketball for Ohio University. Your dad is the athletic director at Dublin Kaufman. Your mom is a physical education teacher. Really, it sounds like it's in the blood.
It is. I came from, ever since I was born, my parents were coaches until I went into high school. So growing up in a, you know, a coach's kid, you have a little different lifestyle. And I think that kind of helped shape me and my brother's games and our work ethic and where we're at today. And then, you know, obviously just continuing to stay in the gym, and our parents definitely had a lot to do with that and getting us motivated and just making us better. So I think it's definitely from our parents. We kind of grew up in the gym, and, you know, from there we started to love the game and kind of get better and started to pursue a career in it.
So your dad was your dad the athletic director when you were in high school there?
He was, yep.
Was that ever strange? I mean, I guess he's not involved in the day-to-day coaching of your team.
No, he was not involved in the day-to-day coaching, but, you know, I grew up watching him coach and kind of got a lot of tips from him, which was pretty special. He taught me a lot of the basics and a lot of what I know today. So I'm spoiled. I got the front row seat for sure.
You're also heavily involved in Ability Matters, and it's a personal relationship for you. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. So my aunt actually runs the business of Ability Matters, and it has a special place in my heart. My sister has Down syndrome, and Ability Matters is a company who provides, you know, needs and experiences for individuals with special needs that they might not, you know, get. And I think it's special. I've been a part of it for a couple years now, being related to her and being around the adults and getting to know them and the experiences that they have been able, you know, to go through with and the places they've been able to go. It's been really special.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm sure she came to a lot of your Ohio State games. Has the family made the trip for any of your WNBA games yet?
They have. They got to more than I expected. So it was pretty special having them down in Dallas.
I would say, because it's what, like, obviously you grew up in Dublin, you went to Ohio State. They could come to every home game.
Yes, they did. I wish they came to every home game in Columbus, but even getting them down there for, you know, one game in Dallas was more than I expected. So it was awesome having them there.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I want to ask you about the transfer portal. How important is it now with the portal luring players away or potentially to invest that time and energy to helping players feel valued and supported by the team that initially recruited them?
Yeah, I think obviously there's a lot of aspects that go into the portal and reasons for why people enter. And, you know, my advice to people would just be a lot of extra things going on in the sport today, whether it's NIL. You know, I think there's a lot of things now that you have to worry about that when I was, you know, making my decision weren't a factor. And I just remind these kids that make sure they go to a place where they feel needed and wanted and somewhere where they can, you know, thrive academically and athletically. I think bringing all the factors together and making sure that school has exactly what you want and somewhere you can go to excel and is important. And, you know, I think obviously the portal's been growing and people have been, you know, experiencing different schools. And I do think it's a good opportunity, but I think I just remind people that, you know, you want to go somewhere where you're going to enjoy it and you're going to thrive. So that'd be my recommendation.
Yeah, NIL definitely changed the game, particularly for female athletes like yourself. There was a real opportunity there to earn a pretty substantial amount of income.
Yeah, NIL, I would say, got big for me my senior year of college. I think that's when it was kind of on the come up. So I experienced a little bit of it in March, and then honestly, when I got out of college is when it kind of started to get bigger and kind of created the monster it is now, which is awesome for these athletes. Awesome. But it's different, and not everybody knows how to manage it yet. And I think that's a good problem to have. But it definitely helped. My experience with NIL helped me moving forward to the W's too, which was pretty useful.
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll help when you're coaching and working with the students that are currently playing, because you actually had a year of NIL to experience. You've been through that process as a player.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then it is a little bit different into the W, but having that experience absolutely, you know, got me more, even more educated in terms of taxes and stuff like that, and stuff you don't really think of when you're in college. But it was a great learning experience, you know, carrying over to the next level.
Do you remember when you started playing basketball?
Oh my gosh, no. I was really young, but probably a really young age.
Yeah, I kind of wondered. Do you remember, was it just always present, but was there a moment when you were like, hey, I think I might want to pursue this, not just as like a thing, but as a career?
Yeah, I went to my dad coached at Baldwin Wallace up in Cleveland, and went to one of his camps. It was an all-boys camp, and me and my friend were the only girls, and we were killing it. And that's kind of a moment where I was like, I could do this. I could, you know, continue to get better at this, and it could be something that I could excel in. And going into high school is the moment I was like, I'm going to start putting my time, attention, effort towards this to become the best player I can be. And obviously at that time it was like, want to go to college, and the W was always in the back of my mind, and that became a realization going into college. So yeah, it was a pretty cool process.
Did you play any other sports, or was it just all basketball all the time?
I actually played volleyball up until my senior year of high school. So I played volleyball and basketball all the way through. I know it's a little unique. I ran track a little bit too, but basketball was always my favorite.
Well, track also, I mean, I was about to say that tracks, but but yeah, you see a lot of sometimes, because there's a lot of running in basketball. It is like, you need a lot of cardiovascular health to play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, now that you're in the WNBA, one of the conversations that we hear a lot is about pay and pay equity, particularly when it comes to what NBA stars make. That's got to be a complicated conversation, because you think, oh, you're a professional athlete, you're making hundreds of millions of dollars. But for a lot of athletes, that's not the case.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think the W is on its way there. You know, we're signing a new TV deal here going into the next season, and that'll be huge for us. And the attention we're getting, I think that's coming eventually. I hope it's when I'm still there, but honestly, I don't know if that will be. But I think we're absolutely moving in the right direction. And you see these NBA guys, and the NBA has been around a lot longer. And, you know, the fans have been there a lot longer, too. So I think the fact that the attention growing on getting more eyes into the WNBA is huge, and I think that's eventually gonna, you know, result in higher paid contracts, and it'll be great for the women in the W.
Yeah, I think NIL in some way, or social media, has helped with that, because they've seen the value of sponsorships in like small ways, and I see more and more companies increasing their sponsorship of women's athletics more broadly. They're like, oh, she can really move a product. Maybe we should just sponsor the team or the WNBA as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of your money comes from when you're in the W, to be honest. They make a lot more money off of sponsorships and deals and companies that want to work with you, which is great, because I think now more than ever, women are able to sign these deals and able to, you know, attract this attention. So I think that's a huge part of it for sure. Something that people are enjoying too.
Yeah, I think it's kind of proof of concept. They're like, ah, this works. There's a dedicated fan base, and they want all their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that ever strange to you? I have to wonder, people coming up to you wanting your autograph, little girls like looking at you and being like, I want to be you when I grow up.
You know, the first time it was a little strange. And I think now it's just a realization that you're a role model for these little girls. And that's pretty cool. And it comes with a lot of weight you have to carry, though. And the way you represent yourself at our level is very important. The way you act on the floor is very important. So I think it's amazing. It makes us better people. And, you know, we just want to help shape the game and shape the pathway for the little girls to come. So it's pretty special.
Yeah, my daughter was so super excited. She's gone to a couple of basketball camps. Oh. We saw you play when you were at Ohio State. She was like, oh, she's like, is she coming in the studio? And I was like, no, but like, she was very excited. It's cute. But, you know, I guess I wonder, what comes next for you? So you're going to work for Ohio State. You're going to stay in the NBA. Like, where do you go from there?
Oh, absolutely. My main profession is a WNBA player, which a lot of people have been asking, like, are you done playing? And no, that's not the case at all. I'll be headed back there in April and continue to play and be done with Ohio State in April. But again, super excited to be here and to work here. But that'll be the focus and hopefully play in the W for as long as I can.
What advice would you have for a kid starting out or a student hoping to get considered for Ohio State?
Yeah, I think when I look back on my journey, it all comes back to work ethic and what you put into it. And, you know, for me, I had the realization at a young age that I wanted to get better. I wanted to be the best I could be at this sport. And just staying in the gym, you know, putting in the extra work. I even tried to stay there longer than everyone else, just kind of go the extra step to get to where you want to go. And I think that's important. And if you have a good work ethic nowadays, it puts you in a really good position.
That was JC Sheldon, the new Ohio State Women Basketball Director of Player Development. You can also catch her playing for the WNBA. Excuse me. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, Yes, Boys Can, a message behind a local teacher's new book. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to Fascinating Ohio on All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour with fascinating Ohioans, and we've arrived at the third and final segment. We're speaking with Ohio's Art Teacher of the Year, Jonathan Jurevich, about his work and his new book and how words and art can combine to communicate things like empathy. Jonathan, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So I want to start with your book. It's a new book called Yes, Boys Can, Inspiring Stories of Men Who Changed the World. And you write in the beginning that it all started after a doctor's visit with your son. What happened?
Well, actually, Richard Reeves, he developed the concept and of this book that was highlighting men who are positive role models in the fields of health, education, arts, and literacy. And he wrote about that experience with his son. But when I was approached about writing this book from the publishing company, it was just after riding in the car with my own son. He was 6 at the time. And he said, Dad, we always read books about women who changed the world. Did any men change the world? And I was driving and I said, well, yeah, of course. And I was like, but yeah, because any answer to that question is so complicated. And I would have loved a resource like this to talk to my son about men who lead with empathy and respect within those fields as positive role models. So when shortly thereafter, I was approached about writing this book and they had this concept and I jumped at the opportunity because I wanted a book like this to share with my son and my daughter.
Yeah. And the book is full of 50 men in all in health, education, arts, literacy. Some of them people may know, like LeVar Burton of Reading Rainbow, Booker T. Washington, Mo Williams. So it has a lot of familiar faces, for sure.
Yeah, it does. And some of these names of these 50 men came from a list that was generated by Richard Reeves, who developed the concept with the publisher. But then there was the space for me to develop and include people from really diverse backgrounds that fell within those fields, people that I know personally that I think the world should know about, and doing my own research and uncovering lesser known people. Because you're right, the book has these names in it, like Mo Willems is in there. Peter H. Reynolds, who wrote the Dot books that a lot of people with young kids in their lives might know about. But then there's also names of social workers and educators and artists that might be very new to people. And that's exciting.
Yeah, I love the variety. You had Mikhail Baryshnikov, a ballet dancer. You had a floral designer. You had social workers. You had nurses, doctors. It was imagining themselves in almost any kind of occupation, not just the ones we might traditionally think of as male.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's so many of these stories start with men who were in roles. Like one of the people in the book, he started off because he was like, oh, I'm going to work at this hospital and I'm going to, you know, investigate like becoming a doctor one day. And instead he was like, I love nursing. And there's several roles like that where it's like they decided that like, I love the role that a nurse plays in patient care. And so they lean into those as well. Or they were in the military and they took their learning from the military into their work as a social worker. That happened actually throughout several of the biographies.
Yeah, you have one of a man named Preston Dyer who becomes an influential social worker, but he was a so-so student and his parents didn't approve of his career choice. Why did you think that was important to include?
Oh my goodness. Because I hope that my own children know that I'm excited for them in whatever fields that they're interested in. But there are those kids that need to know that they should follow those dreams. With Preston Dyer, he wanted to be a pastor because in his local community, the pastor was the person that was taking care of other people. And he realized that he wanted to be someone that took care of other people. And I mean, we look to who's around us, right? And so it wasn't until he got to undergraduate school that on probation, by the way, as you said, he was a so-so student, that it was a guidance counselor that was like, no, wait, I think the part that you want to do is caring for other people, not the writing of sermons or spending time in a church. And so he leaned into social work. But throughout his whole story, and I actually had a chance to email interview with him back and forth. And throughout his story, he continually talked about the fact that he would be on probation in undergrad and then in his master's and then in his doctorate. And each time he would rise to the occasion and has become one of the most influential social workers of a generation.
I think that's good to see because a lot of times, you know, particularly with high achieving students, a lot of times like it comes pretty easy and mm-hmm. that can get lost, particularly if you have a student who has to work harder. Mm-hmm. Like it's great if it comes easy to you. That's wonderful. But you can look at that and think, oh, gosh, I'm just not smart enough to do this work. Not that I would just need a little extra time to do this work.
Yeah. And I think that that's what's inspiring about him, as well as so many of the stories in this book, is that there are men that have overcome obstacles and have done it in a way that they bring kindness and respect and empathy into the work that they do. I think a really fascinating one too is Tom Daley, which all of the listeners might know as Olympic winning diver. We are a huge fan of him in our house, but it's not about his Olympic diving. It's about his knitting.
And oh my gosh, it went so viral during the last couple of Olympics.
Yes. And that's the thing is that I wanted to include him because like here is this man who is like won all of these medals and this fame, but he's also sitting in the stands knitting. And that all stems from the fact that he was so restless when he was waiting for his turn to dive and to compete that he needed something to keep him focused. And that's where that came from. And I can think of students that I worked with today that like learning a skill like that to focus them would be really empowering to them.
Yeah, knitting is a really good, like it definitely will keep your hands busy and keep you from fidgeting.
Yes. And in the book, each of the profiles comes with a go give it a try activity, which is like a hands-on activity where we're prompting the kids that read it with their parents or trusted adults to go explore these things. And with Tom Daly, knitting, traditional knitting might be a hard concept for kids to grasp, but finger knitting, there's lots of opportunities to engage with finger knitting. And that's the activity that accompanies Tom Daly is. And in each one of the profiles comes with one of these ways to take the learning from the bio and then put it into doing something.
Yeah. Empathy is a real undercurrent and a recurring theme in the book. Why was that really important to you in shaping this?
Yeah, my work as an educator over years, the word empathy is something that I teach my students here at school. We all do. It's one of our cornerstone words as my work as a elementary art teacher is I focus on that empathy and we define it. Understanding and sharing the feelings and experiences of others. And we talk about what that looks like. A couple years ago, I gave a TED talk about how we teach empathy to kids. And it is, it's about giving them concrete examples of how they can show empathy in their lives. So throughout my work, whether it's in the classroom or writing this book or research or a TED talk or drawing with Mr. J, which is another extension of my work.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a minute.
Okay, yeah. It's always about having the people around me understand that we're all going through different things. And that before we make judgments, we should boost our awareness and focus on that empathy for one another.
You know, I think books are such a fantastic way to build empathy in people of all ages. It allows you to imagine yourself as somebody else, understand their life, like put their, it, maybe it sounds creepy to say, slip into their skin for a moment, but that's really what you do with books.
Yes, and I love picture books. I grew up with two artist parents, and they bought picture books throughout our entire childhood, middle school, high school. They continue to buy picture books, we all do. And because they can spark really meaningful conversations if we, when we're reading them with kids, hit pause, right? Stop reading and look at the pictures, talk about the characters, talk about the expressions on their faces. It's a really great way to open up conversations about bigger experiences and different types of people all through the images within a book. And the illustrations in this book.
They're fantastic. They're really good.
They're so beautiful. And I think a lot of people think I did them because I'm an art teacher, right? But I wrote the words. illustrations were done by this incredible artist from the UK named Chris King. And they bring the profiles to life in really beautiful ways.
Yeah. It's definitely a very visually pleasing book, which I'm sure makes you happy.
Oh, it does.
Was that a little I mean, I'm sure you trust that like there's many talented artists out there, but when someone else was going to do all the visuals for this, was there a moment where you were like, uh-oh?
Well, when the publishing company sent me his information, I went and looked at his portfolio and I was like, oh no, we're in good hands. And then each time that they would send me sketches, there was only like one time where I was like, ooh, I know this person, like as an individual on a personal level, the face doesn't give the feelings I needed to. And they, I mean, quickly turned back around.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I get it. Yes. But I was delighted by the way the book has turned out.
And you can find Yes Boys Can at most booksellers now?
Yeah. You can order it online. If you don't have it at your local bookshop, you can always ask them to carry it or to order it for you. 'Tis the season for lots of great.
Yeah.
Time, right?
Yeah. So the sixth season of Drawing with Mr. J starts in January with four new episodes. For those who have no idea what Drawing with Mr. J is, can you tell us about it?
Yes, Drawing with Mr. J is a digital drawing series produced by WOSU and WOSU Classroom, and they are very short drawing videos. Directed drawing is like all the rage amongst kids. They love them. But where this gets a little bit different is we start with a really goofy drawing prompt, and then halfway through, a little animated version of me pops onto the screen. And then there is time with me talking to the person drawing along with me about emotions and experiences. And it always wraps up with me saying, like, if you experience this emotion, use your drawing to talk to a parent or trusted adult about what you're experiencing. And it all happens within like 4.5, 5 minutes. So it's really, really fast. But we actually started producing this show right before COVID happened. And it ended up being a great way to engage families when they were at home a lot more. And we've continued. And we just filmed the first 4 episodes of season 6, which feels crazy and amazing. But kids all over the country are drawing along with me in their classrooms, even up into high schoolers. I have a
That's
high school
great.
teacher that send me drawings of like, their unicorn with personality or, a food parade. So yeah, each one of them is a really goofy drawing prompt, but you can check them all out at wsu.org/Mr. J,
Yeah,
right?
you can find all the past seasons online. Get caught up before the new season airs. Well, that'd be a lot of drawing before
Yes,
the new
it
season
would be.
air, but you could definitely start working your way through them. You've also racked up a pretty impressive list of accolades as an art teacher. You currently work in the Olentangy district, and you were just named the best art teacher in Ohio.
The Ohio Art Education Association just this past week had their state conference, and I was named Ohio's Art Educator of the Year. And
Congratulations.
the most beautiful thing about that is that I was nominated by fellow art educators, and fellow art educators selected me for this recognition. And being able to be at the conference and celebrate there with my family and colleagues from across the state was really exciting. It's called the organization's Lifetime Achievement Award, but I hope I still got a lot more life, right? I'm in my 20th year of teaching, and I still love it every day, and what I can do with my elementary students. But yeah, hopefully there's still a lot more go.
Yeah, I definitely would hope so. Because we're not that far apart in age, and I think I got a
I
lot more
know,
go
right?
left too. So, I saved one of the hardest questions for last. Do you have a favorite inspiring story from Yes Boys Can?
Oh my gosh.
Told you it was a hard one.
That is a hard one. Now I'm like going through. I would say that Rufe Zakari is an artist from Africa who grew up collecting trash on the streets and finding garbage, and he and his friends would combine them to make toys and make sculptures out of it. And he really developed into this incredible visual artist who now employs the women and children of his own neighborhood that he grew up in to collect trash from the street. So he's working actively to work on cleaning up the environment, and paying them for the trash that they collect. They clean it, and then he uses them to sew together to make like quilt, like textile-based
Oh,
things
wow.
that oftentimes depict women from his community. And the way that I found out about him was walking through the Columbus Museum of Art. They were having an exhibit, and I saw one of his pieces on the wall, and I was engaged, and I was working on collecting 50 names at the time. And I was like, this guy needs to be in here, because not only his care for the world, but then also the employment of others, and then how he's sewing this trash together. Again, sewing, one of those skills that, I mean, I will be honest, the kids in my classroom, especially boys, love learning how to sew. But it's something that we don't oftentimes think about as something that boys can and should do. So he's a really exciting one. I mean, all of them are. That was like, who's your favorite kid? I don't have one, right?
I won't ask you that question on
No,
air.
won't, no.
I definitely won't. Yeah, I also love that you actually had a quilter, Luke Haynes, in the book.
Oh my gosh. And Luke Haynes is remarkable. And for kids that have moved so much, he moved states several times as a kid, and then studied architecture and then realized, wait, what I was really after was providing comfort and home and warmth. And so he switched from architecture to quilting. And he's such a cool guy.
There's a lot of math and thought that goes into quilting. So I can definitely see that if someone's like, that's a swing. And I'm like, actually, not as much as you might think.
Yeah. And a lot of the same concepts that he was after in this space in architecture, he could apply directly to its quilting and creates anonymous quilts now and leaves them for people to find.
Yeah.
When they need it most.
That was art teacher Jonathan Jurevich. His new book is out called Yes, Boys Can. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides, right here on 89.7 NPR News.